Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Major General Richard Thomas, Director of the Defense Health Agency's Healthcare Operations Directorate. So, General, the military health system is a global system delivering health services anytime, anywhere, with medical readiness at the center of its mission. To that end, I really want to understand your strategic priorities for the DHA Healthcare Operations Directorate. Could you outline them for us?
Sure. I'd be happy to, Michael. I think that if you can outline your priorities, it's key to more so than the mission that I talked about a little bit ago, is even more important than that is the vision. And the vision, I think, for our entire military health system is to have a fully integrated military health system, both that direct care piece that I talked about, right? That's the part that the services provide on their post-cancer stations in their military treatment facilities, and that purchase care sector. A full integration of those two components with a focus on readiness. That's what we're all about. And that's what makes us different from, you know, from civilian agencies. You know, since 1775, you've had military medics, you know, shoulder to shoulder with our troops in every conflict the United States has been involved in. So what makes us a great force, as I said before, is that we have that capability of providing a medically ready force and a ready medical force to go anywhere in the world. Now, it's just not in wartime, but right now, Michael, if you think about it, what's so important is we have troops in more than 140 countries around the globe. Yeah. Five named operations ongoing right today. And, you know, most people don't think about that, but we, you know, if it weren't for combat operations, we would still have a lot to do. I mean, I don't think anyone guessed we'd be in West Africa a year ago. And so if it's not combat, it's humanitarian assistance and disaster relief operations. It's a number of other things that come up. When you want it done, you're going to call the U.S. military health system to support it. And so that hasn't changed for us. So we've got to keep that currency and competency, if you will. And I think that looking at some of our priorities that you asked about, I think driving to continue to innovate through our healthcare delivery, modernizing our TRICARE benefit is a big initiative for us. So in the military, we're good at innovation, and combat's always been the greatest catalyst for that. However, if we want to leverage that technology and employ some targeted analytics, industry-best standards, if you will, in how we deliver care, especially in our purchase care side, so that our whole enterprise is really a modern and sustainable benefit for our beneficiaries. So that's really what we're focusing on right now. I mentioned the readiness piece. That's a huge piece, and it's sometimes hard to quantify what that is, but we do want to look at some efficiencies to be gained across those shared services. And quite frankly, Michael, I don't like that term, shared services. I prefer to call them enterprise services. Mm-hmm. These are things we all do. We all need to sustain the Army, Navy, and Air Force healthcare systems that comprise the overall military healthcare system. And those shared services or those enterprise services, by being as efficient as possible in those areas, we will realize some cost savings. We know that we're not going to eliminate the healthcare inflation. That's just part of the game. Mm-hmm. But we can, you know, I think stem the tide, if you will, or slow the rise. Mm-hmm. And that's really our goal. And I think ultimately some of the core initiatives that we're looking at, I mentioned in our initial mission statement, but our goal really is we want to be able to provide world-class healthcare. We want to sustain our medical education system, which is really the finest, not only in the United States, but in the world. Our training base that we have devised and developed since World War II is some of our graduate medical education programs. That's what gives us the bench that we need to make sure we have the doctors and the nurses and the technicians, the medics, the corpsmen that can perform as advertised when we deploy them anywhere in the world. And back at home station, taking care of our troops and our family members and our retired veterans as well.
So, you know, I want to ask this question. As we mentioned the term shared services, I think I prefer your term enterprise services. And if you could just, why did the military health system, DOD, pursue this type of approach?
I think one of the driving forces was the rising cost of the military health system. Listen, the leadership in the DOD, and certainly I think the American public recognizes what we bring to the fight. Mm-hmm. You know, they realize and they love us for what we do. As I mentioned, I mean, combat has always been a great catalyst for medical innovation, whether it's, you know Walter Reed curing yellow fever, or Michael DeBakey designing our combat support hospitals, or the medical evacuation and systems we've put in place. You know, we've built the finest vertically integrated trauma care system the world's ever seen. And everyone realizes that. And it does come at a cost. But what we've done, we found that there are a number of redundancies and opportunities, really, for us to save money across the services. And I mentioned some of those. So those really are reflected in the enterprise or the shared services. And that's our opportunity that I referred to. So, you know, we know that the American military has a great capability, but we want to sustain that and we want to improve upon it. Quite frankly, I think that we are seeing cost savings already, even though we're only just over a year old in the DHA, just by aligning some things. We want to continue to do that. Right now, we manage, for example, a $10 billion pharmaceutical program. We've realized just with some efficiency modifications there that we've saved we have savings there. I mentioned the TRICARE program, medical logistics. You know, I'm a surgeon, so you know you'll have if you have 16 surgeons, you'll have 16 varieties of surgeon gloves on the shelf if you let us do that. By you know putting a little bit of discipline into that system, you'll actually let us standardize to optimize. So I think there's a lot of redundancy in having three separate services. So looking at those opportunities that exist for us to save money are key. And it's really the responsible way to go ahead. We can't sustain it otherwise.
So switching gears a little bit, sir, could you elaborate on efforts to enhance and strengthen the continuum of care for medical personnel from point of ascension through active service to rehabilitation to transition?
What we bring value to in the military health system is the capability that we have to take care of folks, a wounded service member at the point of injury, to provide resuscitative care immediately, to stabilize and evacuate that patient back to definitive surgical care if they need it on the battlefield, forward-placed capabilities, unprecedented, really, and then to stabilize them and evacuate them on out of theater if we need to. Some of the initiatives we've had, not just our evacuation system, we found over time, for example, with some of our work in traumatic brain injury, that we could forward place our capabilities on the battlefield and then perhaps not have to evacuate people out of theater with the appropriate treatment and rest in theater, put them back in the fight. And that's really what the combat forces wanted, so they wouldn't have to lose people all the time. And quite frankly, the soldiers, too, whenever possible, they'd like to stay closer to the units and return to duty as soon as they can. We found that to be the case over time. I think that the unique capabilities that we provide, not just to the military, the U.S. military, but to the coalition forces. I think U.S. military medicine, I've seen this firsthand in both Iraq and Afghanistan. As I mentioned, I was the U.S. Forces Surgeon General in Afghanistan. We are the glue that holds sometimes fragile coalitions together. So we are a joint. We fight jointly as a military, and we also provide joint medical care. It's the Army, it's the Navy, it's the Air Force, U.S. medical capabilities all together. They all have a stake in that. So that continuum of care, that continuum of unbroken care, really requires all the services jointly to be involved in taking care of every patient.
So, General, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the pharmacy benefit you've mentioned several times, and that's in your portfolio. Sure. Would you tell us more about the benefit itself, how it operates or how the process operates, and what are some of the key challenges this program has faced?
Well, you know, the Defense Health Agency does manage the DOD pharmaceutical program, and that's about a $10 billion program in itself. So we coordinate with the military treatment facility pharmacies, Air Force, Army, and Navy. We also have a contract network that's actually over 57,000 retail and mail order pharmacies. And so by having that broad network, we ensure there's a delivery of a uniform and really consistent and sustainable pharmacy services. As we looked across the formation, we saw opportunities. Our new enterprise pharmacy structure within the DHA has actually developed and implemented some delivery guidance, which has saved money already. Really, this goes across the entire enterprise. So we're taking a broader view at the pharmacy benefit. We've done that already. And they asked the question, importantly, how can we provide an enhanced value to the military health system and the services? So they've got some concepts that they've already generated monies with, and that's one of those was looking at the standardization of the services within the military pharmacies and to hold down costs. So one of their initiatives, for example, was if you write it at an MTF or military treatment facility, you fill it. So as much as possible, this benefits our patients. They get a prescription from their provider on the installation. They get it filled on the installation. And that saves us significantly, Michael. I mean, we save about 30% on each prescription if we fill it ourselves, rather than we have someone go downtown to CVS, for example, and fill it on the retail market. So we're as much as possible, we have several initiatives which are enabling the utilization of the military treatment facility pharmacies. And then the next choice would be the mail order pharmacies. We greatly expanded that capability because it's much more cost efficient for us to use that than, again, than to use the retail market. And the pharmacy division has done a great job with that and already realized a bunch of savings with that. They've done another thing. They prescription transfers, which is really a civilian standard industry practice. We're doing that too. So it makes it easier for folks to get a script in one location to fill it at one of our military treatment facility pharmacies. And this is important for a military family or service member, oftentimes if they're on the move, for example, moving from one location to another because of work or temporary duty.
You highlighted some of the initiatives that have netted some cost savings around the pharmacy benefit. And from that, you can infer some of the challenges. Could you describe for us some of the challenges this program has faced?
Oh, sure. I think like with anything, it is a new organization, so it's unknown. And we are, even though we have things like the pharmacy program and TRICARE, which have been around for a while, it wasn't just like uprooting them and plugging them in. They are embedded now in a larger organization. And so there's been challenges with the reorganization itself. I think there's three things that you have to have to be successful. Number one is the right personnel and staffing, and secondly, of course, is the resources to go with that. But the authorities are the third tier, if you will. And so as we're defining those things for the DHA now, we're also very cognizant that the services have their own statutory regulatory requirements, and we don't want to get in their way of doing what they do best.
Yeah.
We have to remember that we are there to support them in what they do, not to do their job for them, but certainly to make them better at how they do that. So those relationships, relationship building, coalition building, if you will, those are some of the big challenges that we have. And we're also we're figuring out right now that I mentioned a couple of our Manhattan projects already. You know, one is the development of the pharmacy itself, and the next generation of TRICARE contracts. And also we're developing or looking for implementing a new electronic health record in our system. So those are Manhattan-like projects themselves.
And I actually the next question I had was around the second Manhattan project example you gave, which is the TRICARE health plan. Mm-hmm. Could you tell us what's going on in that area? How are you working to integrate direct care with private sector health service delivery contracts? And more importantly, what are you doing around the next generation of contracts?
Oh, it's a big part of what we do in the DHA. Obviously, you know, we require a robust TRICARE network to support the force.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, our direct care capability, that's the medical care that is provided on installations, military installations, in clinics and hospitals, really covers approximately a third of our beneficiaries. More than, you know, three-quarters of our beneficiaries seek care through the support of the TRICARE network. So those managed care support contracts are very important to us, and they're vital, actually. But, you know, TRICARE is not a health insurance program.
Mm-hmm.
TRICARE is the DOD's health care program, which supports the military health system and the direct care system, sometimes masquerades as the health insurance program. But it's different. And so, you know, right now we're looking at establishing our new five-year contracts for the next generation of TRICARE contracts. And so what I did when I first came here, we were given just over a year ago, we were given the option to say, well, maybe with everything else going on in the DHA, maybe we don't want to take this on right this time. Yeah, new contracts. Maybe we should delay that. We thought about it. We did some analysis and we talked to, you know, our services too and asked them. What I think that we decided was, let's go ahead and do it because there are some gaps in our, we'd like to modernize, I think, retool the TRICARE contracts for sure. So what things would we want to see different? We asked the services that. We ran a series of blue ribbon panels and got input from not only the services but also industry, brought them in, what best practices are going on out there. And so there's a number of things that we can do, necessary changes for this next generation of contracts, really to help us reform and modernize the benefit. And I think so if we act now, we can set conditions for the future. Now, it's not going to be – this is not an evolutionary change, but it's a move in the right direction. So we want to, you know, certainly, as I mentioned, to modernize. So the next generation of contracts gives us demonstration authorities, so we can test drive a few initiatives. We can use value-based incentives for preventive care, for example, utilizing big data to drive our decisions. This is something that the industry does already. We want to be more like them when it comes to building our network. Now, I'm never going to be Kaiser Permanente, and that's not our goal. Mm-hmm. But we want to give a state-of-the-art, sustainable capability, great health care to our beneficiaries, understanding that this helps us to enables us to make sure we've got a medical force that's deployable anywhere in the world. You know, and then can take care of folks anywhere in the world too is the issue. So these are necessary steps, I think, irrespective of what other things come between now and then. So some of the things we're doing, we actually closed some of our TRICARE service centers. We had some administrative cost savings with that. We found that they were no longer necessary for us in all locations, so we scaled those back already. Collection of funds from other health insurances has saved us millions of dollars, you know, just by enabling the services, standardizing the process by which they identify. By law, mm-hmm. TRICARE is a second payer. You know, the TRICARE program itself is really governed by laws passed by Congress, and so there's things that we do, the federal law requires us to do, and sometimes it limits us. And we feel in state-of-the-art medicine. So what we did was we asked permission from Congress, and they gave us in the National Defense Authorization Act this past year, in Section 704, a capability to look at emerging treatments and technologies and use our demonstration authority so that we can make sure that we are providing state-of-the-art care both inside the gate in our military treatment facilities on post, camps and stations, if you will, and also in our TRICARE network. Now, what we want to do is we're using this ET2, or Emerging Technologies and Treatments Clause, in Section 704 to exercise demonstration authorities and really eliminate the disparity between the direct care, inside the gate care, and the purchase care systems. We should have a seamless, as I mentioned in our vision statement, the integration of the direct care and purchase care sides with a readiness focus. And right now, they can't be seamless if the edges don't touch. So this has helped us out, and Congress has really helped us with that. So we can, again, do these demonstrations, get some outcomes, and make sure that we're covering our beneficiaries in the meantime.
How is the Defense Health Agency changing the way DoD delivers health care? We will ask Major General Richard Thomas, Director of the Defense Health Agency's Healthcare Operations Directorate, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.